This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial will match 50 cents on each dollar you donate to Lutheran Public Radio, up to $300. So, if you donate $300 to Lutheran Public Radio, Thrivent will send us an additional check for $150. For more information, look for the Thrivent Giving Plus gift form under the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Make your gift to us go further with Thrivent Giving Plus.
Rosh Hashanah marks the start of a new year, a time of humble prayer, joyful celebration, and hope for a new beginning.
We know there is more that unites peoples of faith than divides us. So as Ramadan draws to a close, let us hold on to that spirit of community throughout the year.
Here you have a global organization that is spiritual and yet will bring together Muslims, Jews, Christians, and say, look, we all agree that there's some good big thing out there, but we're not going to put a label on it. Let's worship together.
In our culture, we have a three-headed monster, what I call the unholy trinity: pluralism, relativism, and universalism.
Southern Illinois truck drivers who love issues, etc.
Do you think of yourself as a values voter? I mean, that's a label that was created by, I think, probably the mainstream media to describe a phenomenon in American electoral politics, particularly presidential politics, but also non-presidential politics, the values voter. But it leaves a lot of question marks hanging out there in the air. What does it mean? What values, and do all values voters agree on certain things like abortion, on marriage? I mean, nowadays one could, a lot of these terms have been hijacked. One could call yourself a values voter, meaning you have a set of values you vote on that may have very little to do with the traditional values voters' values. Greetings and welcome to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to begin talking with Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse about the Values Voters Summit that was held this last weekend in Washington, D.C. Later in the show, we'll discuss a Muslim prayer gathering also slated to take place on Capitol Hill this Friday. Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch will be our guest. We'll find out what he thinks about Muslims gathering in the Capitol just to pray. That's what they say, just to pray. Our call-in number live this Tuesday afternoon, September the 22nd. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, or you can Twitter us @issuesetc. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. She also took part in the Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. Jen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
What was the highlight of this past weekend's Values Voter Summit for you?
Oh, for me, for sure. It was talking to all the people that came by the booth. I was working at the combined Ruth Institute National Organization for Marriage booth at the Values Voter Summit, and we were busy the whole time, Todd. I mean, there were just people coming and going through the whole summit, and we met a lot of wonderful and interesting people who care a lot about what we were doing. And I had several of the students who attended my conference on It Takes a Family to Raise a Village conference that we've talked about that took place at the beginning of August. Three of the students came and volunteered to help us at the booth. A couple of them came all the way from Utah to help us. So they were really a hit with the people who came to our booth. Everybody really loved seeing the students in action, and they loved hearing that our mission is really to college students, promoting lifelong love to college students. So to see that, to have the kids out there and for people to hear about our mission, it was very exciting. We just generated a lot of enthusiasm for the mission of the Ruth Institute.
You spoke at the summit. What did you talk about?
I did indeed speak at the summit. I spoke in the towards the end of it, and so by the time it was time for me to talk, I was kind of running out of steam a little bit. You hear, I still have a little frog in my throat from all the talking I did this weekend. But yes, I spoke on a panel that was on just defending marriage. I was on the panel with Chuck Donovan and Todd Mesner of the Heritage Foundation, and we talked about how hopeful the situation is for defenders of natural marriage, how many things are turning in our favor, how desperate the opposition is, how disarrayed the opposition is, and people responded very, very well to the talk that I gave. I brought handouts for 100, and they were all gone. So that means there were at least 100 people in the room, and a lot of people signed up for the Ruth Institute newsletter, which I all of your listeners already know that they can go to ruthinstitute.org and sign up for our newsletter and find out, keep track of all that we're doing here at the Ruth Institute to promote lifelong married love.
Okay, I want to just pause there for a moment because, you know, you've taken me to task occasionally for sounding, kind of a concessionary note when it comes to the promotion of marriage, the protection of marriage in the United States. And you say the future really is bright for the protection of marriage. Make your case very briefly.
Well, you know, look at whenever the people get to vote, they vote for natural marriage. I mean, that's the main thing. And the other thing is that so the places where you see same-sex marriage appearing to make progress, it's places where people aren't allowed to vote on the topic, where things have been either imposed completely by the judiciary or where things are put into place by a legislature that doesn't face much in the way of response from the citizenry. In other words, trying to do something in New Hampshire or Vermont, you have to get the legislators out of there. You can't have a petition and things like that the way we can do in California. So the more involved the voters are, the more you see support for natural marriage, traditional marriage. So that's one of the things that I think is really hopeful. And the other thing that's hopeful is that the supporters of redefining marriage are getting more desperate and more shrill in their arguments. I mean, you know, out here in California, we won Proposition 8. I always try to remind people of that we actually won the election because people try to forget about that. But, you know, Proposition 8 won by 52% of the vote. That's the same percentage by which Barack Obama was anointed the savior of America, you know. So in his case, it was a coronation. In our case, we're supposed to think it was a close call, you know, but it's the same percentage. So what we're seeing there in the aftermath of Proposition 8 is that the opponents of natural marriage have given up even making arguments. They're basically simply saying, you're being mean to us, it's unfair, and we're entitled to equality. And all of the arguments that they make are just variations of that theme. There's really nothing else there. If you actually pierce the armor a little bit and say, well, what will be the consequences of redefining marriage? They don't want to talk about any of that because those are the issues where they lose the voters. The voters just look at that and say, you know, this is not really where we want to go. We can solve your problems in some way besides redefining marriage. And that, I think, is what's emerging as the consensus view in America, is that, you know, we don't have any wish to be mean to gay people, but the problems of same-sex couples can all be solved without redefining marriage. We don't need to take that step.
You also spoke about how the social and economic issues are related to one another. How are they?
Well, that's right. Actually, one of the interesting projects that has just recently come out is that the Heritage Foundation put together a volume called Indivisible. And the point of that volume, it's not a volume, that's kind of an overstatement. It's a book, you know, a small paperback book. It's trying to say that the social issues and the economic issues are really much more closely linked than people think they are. That we really shouldn't think about the values voters over here and the pocketbook voters over there. The issues are much more closely linked than you think. And so that volume came out right as the summit was opening. And so they had the fresh copies of it hot off the press at the Values Voters Summit. And I do have an essay contributed to that volume. And what they tried to do is to get social conservatives to write about economic issues and economic conservatives or fiscal conservatives to write about the social issues. And so they got me with a doctorate in economics to write about the marriage issue and how the marriage issue really is a fiscal issue as well. So that volume, I would recommend to anybody, if you go to heritage.org and look it up. I'm sure it's got to be on their website by now, available for purchase or however they're distributing it. But it looked like a real nice volume. I didn't get to get a copy of it. They all walked out of the room before I got a chance to lay hands on one. But I did see them. I do know they exist.
Finally, then, Jennifer, if you were going to describe to someone who says, what's a values voter in America today, how would you briefly describe that voter to someone unfamiliar with the term in terms of the issues? About 1 minute.
Well, I think the values voters are people who care about the social and cultural fiber of the country more than they care about traditionally understood pocketbook type issues. In other words, they're willing to give something on the pocketbook issues in order to do something about reducing abortion, and in order to do something about strengthening marriage, in order to reduce the sweep of pornography, in order to increase the control that parents have over their own children's education and upbringing. Those kinds of issues, I think, are really central to the values voters. And I guess the way you could say it is that there's a whole culture around what we would call monogamy and childbearing, a child-rearing, a child-centered view of marriage, which is focused on bringing forth the next generation and having the freedom and the power to take care of your kids and to raise your kids in the way that you see fit. This group of voters who has that as their primary concern, they feel that a lot of the rest of the culture and political system is arrayed against them. The culture is dominated by people who are simply not very concerned about how kids are raised or even whether there are any kids in the next generation. And the values voters exist as a coalition to try to bring the needs of parents to the forefront of the discussion.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. You can check out the Ruth Institute under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Jennifer, thank you.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back, they're planning to go to Washington and pray. Well, golly, Christians do this all the time, don't they? They travel to Washington en masse, they take buses and cars, and they gather together on a certain day to pray. It happens all the time. This group is not a Christian group gathering to pray in Washington, D.C., but a Muslim group. We'll find out what that means with Robert Spencer, author of 9 books on Islam, including his latest, The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran, right after this.
These days, value affords me a new attitude. It lets me appreciate that I can start my day with more than a $6 cup of coffee, and that I officially have permission to skip dinner out to spend time talking with my family over Casserole Inn. Concordia Publishing House offers Christian products that help me focus on what matters most. Visit any of the 3 Concordia bookstores downtown in Kirkwood and on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton, or shop online at cph.org and find out what a new value attitude looks like in your life.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial will match 50 cents on each dollar you donate to Lutheran Public Radio, up to $300. So, if you donate $300 to Lutheran Public Radio, Thrivent will send us an additional check for $150. For more information, look for the Thrivent Giving Plus gift form under the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Make your gift to us go further with Thrivent Giving Plus.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
Would you like to post your favorite Issues Etc. audio segments on your website or blog? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the embed green logo, and copy and paste the embed code on your website or blog. It's just like posting a YouTube video. Embed Issues Etc. audio on your website or blog today. We love our on-demand listeners. Old theology, new technology. Issuesetc.org.